All right, folks. Well, my next guest I have known for a long time, and I've used her as a resource many times here at WCCO-TV and radio. She's really one of the foremost experts on drug abuse in the nation. Her name is Carol Falkowski. She's been at Hazleton, the state of Minnesota. You know, but one thing that I didn't know until she came out with her book is that she has kind of a hobby. Like many people, she enjoys cooking. But she has developed a special craft. Her book is called Meatloaf Outside the Pan, and she decorates meatloaf in really cool and unusual and fun things. And Carol, I guess, got and we've done stories on the Meatloaf Outside the Pan. She's been on our 9 a.m. show. But Carol got a big call recently from a very big national star. So, Carol, tell me about what's going on here.
Well, it's pretty exciting. I've been making – my book came out about a year ago, and I've been making – you know, I've made over 100 meatloafs since then in all sorts of new shapes and sizes.
And describe some of them just so people can understand it, because it's
– okay. Well, the premise of the book is that everybody loves meatloaf, especially in Minnesota. But you just take it and you put it in a loaf pan, and it comes out rectangular. And I think meatloaf could do a lot better. So I put it in different shapes and decorate it with mashed potatoes and vegetables or combinations of that. So one of the most recent ones I made that caught the attention of the Rachel Ray Show was a Basset Hound meatloaf. And I had gone to the store, the grocery store. They had a special on eggplant. And I thought, oh, those eggplants would make great Basset Hound ears. And so I have this dog that has, it's a meatloaf that has big eggplant ears.
Okay, I'm going to have to Google this, Carol. Is this on because it's not in the book because the book came out, but.
Yeah, but it's on my website, outsidethepan.com.
Okay, outsidethepan.com. So
it has all these new meatloaf shapes. And it's a Basset Hound, and then it has, you know, a little mashed potatoes for the jowls and the stripe up the front of the face.
Okay. Oh, so the latest loaf. So I can, so this, and this is where people can buy your book. So outsidethepan.com. And, oh, that's really good.
That's unexpected.
Folks, okay. And yeah, I guess I'm pretty good. Maybe I'll take a picture and put it on Twitter. But this is very good. So anyway, you have decorated meatloaf.
Right, and some of them are in the shape of, like, I've used red peppers cut up to look like a lobster. I've done men's necktie. One of the latest ones, I was recently down in Chicago, and I saw in a store window a great-looking sculpture of a tropical fish. So I came back home, and I made a tropical fish meatloaf. And for the different long pieces of the fish, I used a combination of carrots and yellow summer squash. So that's really a unique one, too.
Oh, okay. All right. So what? So here you continue to update it, and people can still buy the book, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The book is there, and it really has over 30 ways to decorate it. I mean, when I put the book together, but I was thinking, people always seem to serve meatloaf with mashed potatoes and vegetables. Why not figure out a way to get them together more upstream and just put them all together in one entree, because they're going to be combined anyway. So,
okay. All right. So you did this and you put like the Basset Hound on, you know, your website. And so then what happened?
And Instagram. I Instagram and I use Twitter a lot. And also the lobster and a few other ones, and fish. The fish one is very easy for people to make. Decorate it with slices of zucchini for the scales and pieces of green onion stalk for the tail and a big slice of a olive stuffed with garlic for the eyeball and carrots for the lip. So the fish is pretty easy. And then I got contacted actually through my face loaf page. Or face loaf.
Your face loaf.
Everything's a loaf with me now.
Yeah.
My Facebook page, I got an email from the Rachel Ray Show asking me if I'd be willing to, you know, talk with Rachel about it and show a few meatloaf. So that just happened yesterday. So that was great.
Okay, and did it air yesterday?
Yeah, it did.
Okay, all right. Gosh, we'll have to try and Google it. So what was it? Where did they tape the show?
It was just a phone call.
Oh, it was a phone call, okay.
She was in the studio, and they were showing photos of my meatloafs, and then I was just having a conversation on the phone with her, like we are now.
Well, now, have you seen any uptick in traffic to your website?
Oh, yeah, it's been good, you know? It's been great, so... A lot of people watch that show, and she called me the Michelangelo of meatloaf.
Well, that is so cool.
Quite a nickname, you know. I think she's
a great personality. You know, I enjoy watching the show, and I also enjoy reading. She even has her own magazine, for goodness sake. But
right, she's got everything: dog food, cat food, furniture, kitchen appliances. I mean, right, and she's such a normal, upbeat person. You know, it was really fun.
And so when you first saw the message, I mean, did you think it was for real? I mean, you must have been going, "Oh my goodness!"
I was surprised, but I was pleased. You know, I actually have to admit that I don't check my Facebook page that often, so it sat there for a week. And then I thought, oh, darn, I should have gotten back to this one right away, but I didn't notice. It's been a while in the making, and it was just great. I think, especially in Minnesota, after we have the first frost, to me that signals the beginning of meatloaf season. And unlike, there are a lot of meatloaf books that give you different recipes to use, and there's so many great combinations you can use to make meatloaf, but this book is really about, I give my favorite recipe, but if you have your own favorite recipe, keep using it. I just encourage people to resist the loaf pan and try to make something just a little bit different. The easiest is just shaping it in the shape of a single layer cake and then using mashed potatoes as frosting, and then you can sprinkle, peas or corn kernels or whatever on top so it looks like a birthday cake or something. You can make any ordinary dinner look a little more colorful, and there's no reason why our meatloaf in the middle of winter have to look as bleak as the Minnesota landscape.
All right. Chatting with Carol Falkowski. She is the author of a book that is called Meatloaf Outside the Pan. She was just on the Rachel Ray Show for her varied meatloaf. If you want to see some of her recipes or buy the book, you can go to her website, and it's outsidethepan.com, outsidethepan.com. Carol, how did you get started? I mean, have you just been doing this for years, or, I mean, where did this start?
Well, I don't know. I've always been interested in cooking, and you raise a family, and you're cooking all the time. And right out of college, I had a part-time job at a gourmet cooking store, but it really started a few years ago. I had my brother and his wife in town for the Christmas holidays, and I was going to make a meatloaf for Christmas Eve, so we had good leftovers, and then another big meal on Christmas Day, and I thought, while I was making the meatloaf, well, it's still Christmas Eve. I have to do something a little more special. So I shaped it in the shape of a wreath, and then I was serving it with green beans, so I just took the green beans and stuck it in the wreath like it was the leaves of the wreath,
mm-hmm.
and then put some red sauce on and baked it, and boom, it looked like $1 million. And so then over the course of 3 years, I sort of made more meatloafs to accumulate enough to put in the book, which was about 30 of them, and then I did that about a year ago. So it includes a lot of them that are like holidays. There are a lot for Easter, like the Easter egg meatloafs are pretty spectacular, I think, and the hearts for Valentine's Day are nice. I made an American flag meatloaf, a lot of Christmas meatloafs, and I'm making all new ones.
Halloween meatloafs?
Halloween.
The Halloween is like round, and it looks like mashed potatoes are big in the decorating world, right?
Right, but with the Halloween ones, I use for the witch's hat eggplant for the hat and brim.
Oh,
and then,
okay.
How you get those spiraled, you can buy them at the store now, spiraled beets or spiraled sweet potatoes. Imagine those as the witch's hair.
Ooh, okay.
I didn't know
you could get spiraled beets, but I'll look next time I'm in the produce aisle.
They're great. I don't own a spiraler, but they sell them at my store. So the witch's hair, or you can use sauerkraut for the witch's hair, and then use dark black olives for the eyes and witch's lips. It's really easy, and it's nice looking. So that's it. And then one time I was traveling for work down in New Orleans. I was doing some training down there. And as fate would have it, at the New Orleans airport, there was a bookstore that had cardboard cutouts of Donald Trump and Hillary. You know, it was before the election. So I asked someone to take my photo, you know, with me in between Donald and Hillary. I thought that was cute. And then the more I looked at that photo, I thought, well, I should make a Trump meatloaf and a Hillary meatloaf. And so I did that. And you can find that on my website as well.
Well, that's so cool. Now, let me ask you, are you sort of, I mean, do you have any rivals in the meatloaf world? Or do you think you're pretty much got this cornered here?
I really think I have. I think this is a very small niche in the world. I have not seen a lot of competition, and I'm not sure this will ever be huge, but it's certainly unique. Yeah, I don't see a lot of other people doing this, which really surprised me, actually, because it's a fun thing to do, and if you love meatloaf, it's just like, you know, you learn how to sculpt with it. My uncle was an artist. My dad made pottery pots. My mom made needle points. And so I have this kind of people who are artists in my family, and it just took me all these decades to find the medium, which is raw meat.
And I guess, you know, I guess the thing that I like about meatloaf is that it's so, first of all, I like meatloaf. I think most people like meatloaf, but there are so many different kinds of meatloaf. I mean, everybody's got their own recipe, and I guess you can use your own recipe, obviously.
Exactly. If you have a recipe you like, or even if you don't eat meat and you make some sort of a loaf that's out of beans or something, you know, vegan, just keep using that. Just as long as it's not too runny and doesn't, you know, has the consistency that you can still sculpt with it.
Right. And have you done signing events? I mean, sir, what's the reaction that you get from this book?
Well, it's really tongue-in-cheek, you know. It's a lot of fun. And I did a meat and greet loaf.
Meat and greet loaf. I got it. you've got the bad puns down, Carol.
Oh, I know. And it's really a way to just get them all out of me, you know.
Right. Well, it must be nice, actually, for, you know, because your career is such serious stuff. It must be nice to have this, you know, avenue as well.
Well, you know, drug abuse, I've been a drug abuse epidemiologist for decades, and, you know, the go-to person for framing up issues related to drug abuse, and it's typically or often in the wake of some tragic
absolutely
death or something, and it's grim work, you know, and this, there is nothing, let me tell you, grim about meatloaf. It's just there for you.
Right, and especially your versions. Well, I want to make sure I get the name of the book. Here it's Meatloaf Outside the Pan.
Yes.
And your website is outsidethepan.com.
Yep, outsidethepan.com, and it has different clips of different media things. I have Meatloaf Media, and it has the latest loafs are in the back, and it's just a lot of ideas for people, and I think it's a great gift, you know, for someone who likes cooking. This is a great way to introduce a whole new generation to the fun of meat and potatoes.
Well, I think it's absolutely great. Again, it's Carol Falkowski's book, the title, Meatland. Now, can you just buy it at a bookstore, or do you have to buy it through you and your website?
Oh, no, you can buy it. It's on Amazon, too. So you
it's on Amazon.
Yeah.
Of course it's on Amazon. So Meatloaf Outside the Pan, and you can also buy from Carol's website. And the website has all of these incredible pictures of what she can do with meatloaf. She was just on Rachel Ray, outsidethepan.com. Carol, thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, thank you. And also, one more thing, my website hooks you up with my Instagram and my Twitter and my Facebook. So that's really the go-to place for getting to all these other places where you see the more current meatloaf.
Right. And is there something new that you're – I mean, do you have a new inspiration or –
Well, my tropical fish is really my latest, and then I have some that I've yet to show for Halloween this year. So
okay,
it's really endless. I just love it.
Well, Carol Falkowski, thank you so much, and congratulations for being on Rachel Ray. That's pretty cool.
Oh, thank you, Esme.
Okay, take care.
Yep.
And again, this is just really fun stuff, folks. Outsidethepan.com, and also Meatloaf Outside the Pan. Carol Falkowski is the author, and if you just want something that's kind of crazy or different or fun, this is it. All right, folks, we are going to take a break much more ahead on this edition of Saturday Night with Esme.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Oh, my goodness. Craziness, craziness, craziness. If you're just joining me, Esme Murphy, I filled in for John Hines yesterday. I told the story about getting my father-in-law's car stolen because I obviously dropped the key in a downtown Minneapolis parking ramp, or it's possible I left it in the car. It was not in the ignition. I know that. But coming to work tonight, I'm like looking around at every maroon van, and I saw one on a parking lot, and I said, "God, that kind of looks like it." And it was it. And I was just, I mean, I just couldn't believe it. So anyway, we're working on getting the van back. It's my father-in-law's van. My husband does have power of attorney. So the drama now is, will they release it to my husband, who actually had the copy of the power of attorney with him as he finally met me to talk to the Minneapolis police. So if they don't go with that, I guess it'll be towed to the impound lot. But at least we'll know where it is. Anyway. Crazy stuff, folks. Listen, we've got a lot ahead. Dave Schultz coming on. A lot to talk about in politics. Also, coming up in the next half hour, obviously, the Super Bowl is coming. And with the Super Bowl and all the attention and all the revenue it's expected to bring to Minneapolis, to the Twin Cities, to Minnesota, it is also considered one of the biggest moments or events that attract human sex trafficking. And Scott Morin is part of the organizing team for Justice Awakening 52. And he is going to talk about that and what kinds of things are being done to try and, you know, raise awareness of exploitation and trafficking around the Super Bowl in Minneapolis this coming winter. So first we are going to take a break, give you some weather, and then we'll talk about that with Scott after this on News Radio 830 WCCO. It is 7:36 in the Twin Cities. Kind of a busy night. There was a lightning delay at TCF Bank Stadium, so the Gopher game just getting underway, and the Wild home opener also underway in St. Paul. And then in downtown Minneapolis, thousands of people, despite the heavy, heavy rain, are expected for the zombie pub crawl, which is...
I know that's one of your favorite things in the world.
You know, it really kind of creeps me out, I got to tell you. First of all, there are a lot of people there, but it's kind of... But the costumes, it's like all these people... I saw a large crowd of people that were all dressed like versions of It. You know, the scary clown, Stephen King's scary clown. People go to really extraordinary lengths, and I have to imagine expense to dress up for this. Just weirdness.
Well, it either shows one thing. You got a little dough to spend on a costume, or you got a lot of creativity to make the costume and a lot of nimble hands to stitch
there you
those
go.
Together.
All right. Well, obviously, Minnesota, Minneapolis, the Twin Cities, is going to be host to the Super Bowl that is coming up, of course, in February. And one of the concerns around the Super Bowl is that it is attracts human sex trafficking. It's considered by some to be one of the largest events where people are exploited and trafficked. And joining us right now is Scott Morin. He is part of the organizing team for Justice Awakening 52. And they are going to have an event that will be held on February 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at Redeeming Love Church in Maplewood to talk about this and raise awareness of it. So, Scott, thank you so much for coming on.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Esme.
All right, Scott, look, why don't you tell us about your organization, okay?
Well, I am independent as far as my own personal organization, but I have partnered up with Justice Awakening 52. Actually, it's spearheaded by Action 169, which is led by survivor leader and director Danielle Freitag, and of course they're collaborating with some other organizations as well, which is essentially how I'm getting involved. And I met Danielle at an event around exploitation, and we connected actually in a different state and got reconnected back in Minnesota here around brainstorming around what we were going to do for the upcoming Super Bowl.
Okay, so this is partnering with an organization that's already done that. And what are some of the goals here? Because the event itself, and tell us about the event and what are some of your goals here?
Yeah, with the event, it's really to raise a ton of awareness around it and to train people, to activate people in getting involved in fighting exploitation, especially commercial sexual exploitation. So that's really the only goal of the whole thing.
And tell me about how what evidence there is to support this concern that really the Super Bowl, for all the money and fun and the people coming to Minnesota, what evidence is there that shows that really this is sort of a beacon that attracts human sex trafficking?
You know, it's really a lot of the large events all over the world, whether you're talking about the World Cup or whether you're talking about the Super Bowl or some other large sporting event, just attracts a lot of people in. And that tends to come with it. So as they've studied the Super Bowls over the last several years, when a Super Bowl comes to town, there is an uptick in the exploitation in that city. And usually once it upticks, then it usually stays there. And so that's really essentially the concern, is how to try to stop it from ticking up in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area and then staying there. So that, I think that's why all the hubbub around what are we going to do about it. And if you look at some of the stats too, like this one is from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. At the 2011 Dallas Super Bowl, 133 arrests were made due to people having sex with minors.
Wow. Okay. So and the victims here are both people who are under the age of 18, but also I imagine there are people who are young adults as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Both categories are involved.
In terms of the way, I know one of the things that people really have struggled with, including lawmakers, is the use of some of these websites, the most notorious one being Backpage, to cut down on ads there. Is that part of what you're talking about here?
As far as fighting it?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I went and helped fight this issue around the Houston Super Bowl last year, and that was one of the things we did, was we spent a lot of time on Backpage, reaching out to people, giving them options. Sometimes you want to just make it non-threatening, like if, a simple text to someone who's posted an ad saying, if you know someone who is in danger, feel free to reach out. We can help connect you with resources, things like that. And so it's reaching out to those folks, and just because a lot of times people are in those positions. I know some people are going to say, well, people get to decide whatever they want to do in life. But a lot of times, in my opinion, with this industry, is people are in this industry not necessarily because they dreamed about it as a little girl or a little kid. There are usually reasons why they end up in this world, and a lot of them have to do with vulnerabilities, whether there's some sort of a poverty issue going on, whether there was some abuse going on, whether there was some sort of drug stuff involved. Is people are vulnerable, and then they end up in this world. And so that's part of just reaching out on Backpage, is to say, hey, we can help you transition to something else if you'd like to.
Right.
A lot of Backpagers.
And so we're chatting with Scott Morin. He is part of the organizing team for Justice Awakening 52 that is seeking to really put the word out about human sex trafficking and reaching out to victims, specifically around the Super Bowl event. Let me ask you about the work you did in Houston, because I think that's so fascinating. So you actually went and looked at these ads, and some of the ads are clearly being posted by women or men that are themselves victimized by human sex trafficking,
yep.
And you're actually reaching out to them?
Yep. So I didn't actually look at the ads myself, but I might have been partnered up with someone, like a woman who was looking at the ads, finding the phone numbers, and then passing them on to some of the men or the other women that were there helping do the outreach. And we'd contact them and see if there was any way we could help with transition. Because so often people don't leave that industry because they have no idea where they would go or what they would do. And do they have a resume? Who's going to give them a job when they want to know their job history and things like that?
And in terms of, you know, there must be just tremendous fear for these individuals.
I think absolutely. A ton of fear. I mean, that's kind of the pimpology 101 is get the person scared and trap them into something like this through fear, and it's their only option. And in that world, there's beatings and, you know, it's filled with tons of fear.
In terms of the law enforcement role, I know that there has been certainly at the federal level and many other states to make sure, especially that minors who get sucked into this, that they don't end up getting charged with a crime. Is that something, I mean, what do you think about that, and how has that message gotten out there?
I think it's trying to get out there more and more, and I think it's a great idea. I don't know if you've heard about this, but Sweden did something interesting where they put a law against purchasing sex, but they didn't make prostitution illegal, which was really interesting because they were trying to put the penalties where the penalties should lie versus someone who's already been vulnerable and now you're going to throw them in jail as well.
Yeah, and that would take care of everybody. I mean, most of these laws have to do with minors, and so if you have somebody who's 18 who may have been victimized for years, it wouldn't always apply. But that I had not heard about that as well. We're chatting with Scott Morin. He's part of the organizing team for Justice Awakening 52. He was part of a team that helped out at the Houston Super Bowl to try and raise awareness of human sex trafficking and exploitation. What, in addition to kind of scoping out all of these ads, what other steps is the organization planning to take?
Well, some of the things we did in Houston is we did strip club outreaches where you're just going in and ladies are going in to try to connect with the strippers. And interestingly enough, a lot of strip clubs will let people in to do that. So going to the strip clubs, a number of Asian massage parlors, people are being exploited in those places as well. So we did outreaches to those places. We went down to the track area in Houston and reached out to folks that were down there.
And I'm sorry, I'm not that familiar with Houston. What is the track area?
I'm trying to think. I believe it was Bissonnette Street was the area where folks would go to purchase.
Oh, so there's one area was sort of notorious for being a center of.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Yep. So you actually literally went down there and tried to talk to people.
Yep, exactly. And we would, you know, we don't want to detain someone very long because they're probably being monitored, but to just say hi and pass on a phone number with that they can call if they're in danger. So lots of different outreaches like that. We also did virtual reality outreaches, which was kind of cool. We went to the area where everybody was congregating around the Super Bowl in Houston, and we had these virtual reality goggles where they could put them on, and when they would, and everybody wants to do that, you know, so people would grab them, put them on, and once they had them on, they would have five choices of five different women that they could choose from.
Oh my
gosh. And when you picked a woman, it would go into her story, and she would talk about how she ended up in the prostitution world and what happened to her while she was in there and how she got out. And then she would give an appeal at the end saying, will you be someone who educates me? Will you be someone who gives me a job? Will you be someone who, whatever it is, to try to help me transition to a different world.
Okay. Again, chat with Scott Morin. He's part of the organizing team for Justice Awakening 52. To raise the organization's goal is to raise awareness of exploitation and trafficking, human trafficking around the Super Bowl in Minneapolis this winter. You've got an event on February 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at Redeeming Love Church in Maplewood. What tell us about the event, who's invited, what kinds of things you're going to be doing.
Yeah, anyone is invited to the event. I'm going to be doing a workshop at the event on why men seek porn, strip clubs, prostitution. That's one of the things I'm going to be doing there. There's going to be a national recording artist coming in to do music. Her name is Becca Shea. There are speakers coming in from Kansas and Texas. One of the speakers from Kansas, his name is Benji Nolo, and he did a documentary that came out a few years ago that is very amazing. If this is if someone is just being introduced to this issue for the first time, that is a great documentary to check out to just see what's out there. His documentary is documenting what's happening with sexual exploitation around the world, and it's called Nefarious, Merchant of Souls.
Wow.
So that's a phenomenal documentary to check out. And he's coming in. He's one of the speakers. And so there are people that, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with this term, but some people call it the abolitionist movement of trying to abolish this issue. And so there are people in this movement that are coming in from all over the nation to speak and give talks and raise awareness.
And let me ask you, Scott, when in Houston, when you went down to try and actually talk to people in certain, you know, the street where it was kind of people were known to go and try and you know, find prostitutes, when you talked to people around the Super Bowl, were most of the people who are, you know, victims of human trafficking, the prostitutes, are they sort of native to the cities where the Super Bowl is, or is there an influx of people actually coming in because of the Super Bowl, or is it both?
It's both, but what's something that's interesting, and I don't know who verified this or how it was verified, but some people believe that at the 2010 Miami Super Bowl that 10,000 prostitutes were brought into that Super Bowl.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know if it'll be anywhere close to that in Minnesota, and of course statistics are very elusive stats, but the point being is that whatever it was a significant increase. It's both local and people coming in, taking advantage of an opportunity. Lots of people in one place.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen,
go ahead.
No, you go ahead here real quick.
I was just going to say that it's really just a business. You know, the average pimp, I think, makes around $547,000 a year. It's a business.
Wow. All right. Well,
but exploiting people. So.
Right. Okay. Well, Scott Morin, the website is justiceawakening52.org. That's justiceawakening52.org. Thank you so much for sharing this evening. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Esme. Have a great night.
Absolutely. All right, folks, much more ahead here. We have to take a quick break. Still ahead, Professor David Schultz. We'll be chatting with him pretty soon.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is 7:56 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy with you for another hour. I want to let you know that Professor David Schultz is coming up here in just after the top of the hour with the news breaks, both local and for CBS. Want to let you know that there is a lot going on around town at TCF Bank Stadium. They just got that football game underway a short time ago after – how long was the lightning delay?
It's supposed to kick off just after 7, so it's about a 40 to 45-minute delay. It kicked off around 7:45.
Didn't that happen last week with the Gophers?
Yes, they had it.
And with disastrous results.
Yes. But this is a little bit different because –
I don't mean to laugh, folks, but
– this is a little bit different.
This was the beginning.
Yes, yeah. This is basically the beginning of the game. So nothing had kicked off. There's no momentum. It's just teams have to wait a little bit longer to start.
Which is probably better, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, last week it was, I think it was in the fourth quarter when
right,
it happened at Purdue.
Left and Purdue had just gone ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really close. And then the last 9 minutes, it was kind of all downhill for the
Gophers.
Yeah,
it just seemed like the Gophers came out flat after that.
All right. So we've got that going on. You got the Wild game in St. Paul, and you got the zombie pub crawl. This thing is big, and there are a lot of roads closed, so be careful of that in downtown Minneapolis. Stay tuned. News Radio 830.